Okay.
So I have a phrase that I've heard at least once, maybe a few times during these Q&As has been something like laying a foundation. So everybody's different, but is there some kind of general advice you would give to those of us who are just entering monastic practice, what to pay attention to, how to lay a good foundation?
One is recognizing that our practice grows and develops dependent on the foundation that we lay, so that it in terms of the fundamentals of our relationship to precepts and training and rules, or our perspectives on right view, and having a fundamental framework that is really in tune with Dhamma, then our practice will grow based on that foundation. So it is important to be paying attention at laying a good foundation. And it comes down to that, in the sense of, I think that again, where so often Ajahn Chah's teachings would be about sila and samaditti, virtue and right view, and those are quite critical to the, because if either of those are wonky, the meditation just either doesn't grow, or it gets all pear shaped and doesn't really bear great fruit. So that establishing a reflective investigation of, well, what does it mean to have integrity or have precepts? Because sometimes we can assume that having precepts is, we can just have more rules, and then the more rules I've got, the more precepts, the more sila I have, which is not really the case at all. It's one's relationship to sila, and in terms of, because that's like that traditional the stock phrase that the Buddha uses in describing, say, the sila of a stream enter, in the sense of being, one sila is not stained, not mottled, not blotched. But then it's also conducive to concentration. And so that's part of that phrase, is that sila is something that we're helps to support the settling of the mind, and so not sort of relating to precepts from a fear-based foundation, or even a greed-based, in terms of, if I just get more precepts, and I'll be more pure. And it has a certain logic to it, but it doesn't really fit with Dhamma. And so that it's, what is it that helps to create a sense of clarity and well-being that allows us to free the heart from dukkha. So that's where that sila, working with samaditti, with right view, and just like that. It's like when your fundamental definition of right view is they on a transcendent level is the Four Noble Truths, and so that one is viewing experience through the lens of dukkha and cessation of dukkha, as opposed to viewing experience through the lens of me here inside, with my sense of self, and the world outside, which I'm either trying to manipulate to fulfill me or to run away from because I don't like it or feel overwhelmed by it. So it's a experiential basis of how we view experience. But then also on a mundane level, right view is fundamentally just understanding and recognizing karma and its fruit. That whole lengthy definition of how the Buddha describes mundane right view is all around the action and result of action, and so that understanding. Yeah, we're definitely the owners of our karma, heirs to our karma, born of our karma, related to our karma, abide supported by our karma, and it's taking responsibility for that. So I think another aspect in terms of laying a foundation for the holy life is a couple things. You know, within that sense of sila and samadhi, and you know, because then you're really nourishing the aspiration for peace and wisdom, which is our using the meditation to take us to that goal of peace, internal peace, tranquility, clarity, and wisdom, understanding, discernment, and so but then also in terms of laying a foundation, that approaching the holy life from a perspective of giving to it, because so often we're conditioned to think in terms of, you know, what can I get out of this, and what can I get out of these people, and it's a miserable mental state to have to be in, and that ability to give of oneself to the training, to the community, to the people that one lives with, that lays a very strong foundation for being happy in the holy life. Because if one is living the monastic life with that, constantly having that ledger out and trying to figure out what one's getting out of it, you're going to be miserable. Doesn't matter, because it's desire functions on every single level of our being, and it doesn't matter how much knowledge or how much we've been given or how peaceful our mind becomes. There's always something more, and it's like the mind can get, and it can get more peaceful. Or we can get more knowledge, or we can get more understanding, or we can get more benefit in some sort of way, shape, or form. But it's not a happy way to live. It's exactly why we're dissatisfied with the world already. So that approaching living the monastic life from a place of giving oneself to it and giving oneself to the community and making an effort to to be harmonious, to learn how to get along with people. I've been here for a long time, and I've been a monk for a long time, and I've lived in community for a long time. And I could go down the line and find fault with every single person. But I'm not dumb. but it's a pathetic way to live. And so that learning how to live in a harmonious way, in a skillful way, and that's really helpful foundation for it, because you want to be able to live the holy life and the monastic life, a life of spiritual training, in a way that actually makes you happy. And the thing is, as if that happiness comes from some kind of sensory gratification or some kind of distraction, it doesn't actually make you happy. It's amissa sukha and nilamissa sukha. So the Buddha points to these two kinds of happiness, and amissa sukha is, amissa is usually translated as sort of worldly or like pleasure of the flesh, because it actually does mean flesh, but it's kind of like it's the bait. It's that bait that is on the hook that fish go to. It's the bait that's in a trap that, of course, you put out for the rats and the mice, and then we ship them off, which is pretty benign compared to what other people do with them. But it's that happiness with a bait. So it's so that niramissa sukha, that non-material happiness, that non-worldly happiness, isn't kind of say non-worldly in the sense of kind of space cadet, totally out of it, but grounded and steeped in well-being, based on the fruits of incredibly skillful life. And it's, those are some aspects. And part of it as well would be around the recognition that we're in the same way that I'm thinking back of living the life with a sense of giving oneself to the training, giving oneself to the life, and also recognizing that we are here on a day-to-day basis because of the gifts of others, and sometimes it's easy to forget that, or to overlook it sometimes, because it. Because on a certain level, I mean, our standard of living is actually far more comfortable than a lot of people in the world, certainly more secure, even though we're quote unquote homeless, and that is it because of the generosity and kindness of so many people, and so it's important to be living a standard of practice that one is not taking any of that for granted, and being willing to give oneself to the training so that it can be a source of of encouragement and inspiration to others, because they give so much to look after us. So those are some thoughts.